Want to cut cooling bills without cutting comfort? Lower utility costs and enjoy cool and consistent comfort with a highly efficient air conditioner from Luxair. With Luxair's consumer rebate program, educators, nurses, first responders, military personnel, and veterans can enjoy exclusive rebates on qualifying purchases of Luxair equipment. To learn more, call Chris Brewer at Affordable Heat and Air, 317-656-7945. They'll recommend a system tailored to your home that provides comfort, energy savings, and lasting performance.
This is Trackside with Kirk Cavan and Kevin Lee on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.
For 2024, the NTT IndyCar Series is underway here in St. Pete. Newgarden leads the field, but watch that orange and black car. Pato Award on the inside, couldn't quite get there.
Oh, but four wide further back with Romain Grosjean dropping back. There's contact with some of those green and black cars. That's Marcus Armstrong as well and Rinus VK.
It's almost a collision there on pit road, and Joseph Newgarden, who has led every lap to this point, will lose the lead here on pit road. I believe that's Colton Herta that came off with a diff.
Watch the blue and white car. Look at the one in the middle, Colton Herta, but Felix Rosenqvist on the right is ahead. Watch the line out. Rosenqvist wins it, even though Herta goes ahead, but it's addressed once they get back out on track.
Joseph Newgarden just slipped inside of Felix Rosenqvist, and Joseph Newgarden now is running in the second position. Award is now the next to try to reel in his former teammate, Felix Rosenqvist.
What a way to start a new championship season. Indy 500 winner, Rolex 24 at Daytona winner, St. Pete winner for the third time. The Firestone Grand Prix of St. Pete belongs to Joseph Newgarden.
Great job, everybody. Really nice execution.
You know, St. Pete is such a great kickoff for us. It's just incredible fan support. You know, you feel the energy of IndyCar racing when you're in this town to start the year. It gets everybody excited for the entire season. So just appreciative to the support and the amazing turnout that we had this weekend. It's been a long off season, a lot of hard work, and now we can at least feel confident to start this 24 season on a good note.
And we are underway. Hello and welcome. Trackside, 93.5, 107.5 The Fan in Indianapolis and other portions of the country. It's spring break. I'm staying in Florida. Headed to Sebring coming up tomorrow for the Mobile 1 12 Hours of Sebring, which you can see on NBC partners over the weekend. I think we start on Peacock at 9:30 a.m. Should have this in front of me, but mid-afternoon. I'll find this by the end of the show. Somewhere around 2:30 or 3 or 3:30, we go on USA for the rest of the 12 hours. We'll talk more about that later on in the program. Highlights courtesy of NBC Sports, IndyCar Radio, whoever else contributed, of the Firestone Grand Prix of St. Petersburg from yesterday afternoon, starting off the season, and a beatdown for Joseph Newgarden with career win number 30, 10th straight season with a win. That one kind of stabs at you a little bit for a guy that we still consider relatively young. And here we go in 2024. Thanks for joining us tonight. Elijah Roberson is in our studios. I'm Kevin Lee. Kurt Cavan is in Indianapolis. We have racing to talk about, Kurt. Let's do that.
Yeah, let's do that. But just like you, I stopped to pause at least once already today to think about 30 career wins for Joseph Newgarden. And the 10 straight years is only part of the story. But the fact that he's now within one of Helio Castroneves, Dario Franchitti, and Paul Tracy, and there's only 12 drivers in history who have won more races than Joseph, and he's young. He's 33. I mean, you would expect he would drive at least until he's 43, one would assume. I mean, you're talking about Dixon-type level at this point. I mean, if he were to throw, even two more for the next 10 years, he would be at Dixon's doorstep. So this is, and two seems low. You know, I mean, he had four last year. He's already got one this year. He's going to have seven of the last 16 races on oval tracks. He's won eight of the last 11 on oval tracks over the last two plus years. So, yeah, these numbers are going to get high quick. I mean, you think about how long Will Power's been in this game. Will Power only has him by 11. Will went winless last year. You would think that Joseph probably going to hang another four on this season. And he could be at Will's doorstep in 2 years. So this is pretty amazing stuff. And we watch it. I mean, I know this was a dominating performance. 92 of the 100 laps led. Honestly, it probably race could have been a little bit longer and we'd have forced three stops and maybe everybody would have, you know, then gone just a tenth or so, just more aggressively. And maybe something would have happened that would have shook up the field a little bit, but Joseph did a masterful job. I thought his qualifying was outstanding and his racing was on, you know, just certainly on spot. And it just keeps getting better for Joseph Newgarden.
You know, you bring up something. I want to get back to Newgarden and the topic at hand, but you talk about stops and you could make it a little bit longer to make it a three-stopper. I don't know if we brought it up on this show before or if someone else mentioned this to me. What about this to manipulate things, to make it a three-stopper and not have fuel saving? Adjust the size of the fuel tank.
Yeah.
Race to race based on what you think. It's 18 and a half ish gallons, I believe, still is the category. Last time I checked, it was. Make it 16. And then it becomes a three stopper because you do have a, especially when you're on network TV, it's not easy to say 110 laps because then you're talking, you need an extra half hour of the TV window and you run some risks and things there. And I think that's one of the advantages to IndyCar. That it's a shorter race than NASCAR. I don't know that I want to lengthen them. I like extra pit stops because it brings in more of the team aspect. And you're not going to eliminate fuel saving because timing of yellows and doing something off strategy can bring it into play, but you can lessen the significance. Now, I don't think the processional nature of this race was totally because it was a fuel saving race. There were people saving, but I didn't get the sense it was massive numbers. I didn't hear anybody really saying, you've got to save me more to make it to the end. There were enough cautions that made it just simply an easy two-stopper. But I think you have more of a chance of things getting mixed up. The best battles in this race have been the blend off of pit lane. So I want more of that. So that would be my suggestion.
No, you're the blend off pit lane. We should have more races. I mean, it's track dependent and track specific, and it varies so much from place to place. But this one has always been so dramatic. You know, the driver coming off pit lane has got such a run to that second corner, and the way the cars on the racetrack go around the first corner, it really is a dramatic look. And it's so cool to watch. So just an aside there, but we were talking about Joseph Newgarden. You know, really the only touching moment he had in this particular weekend, aside from maybe just making it into the Fast Six, you know, I think he was third and fourth in his two previous rounds or his first two rounds of the qualifying format. The only real trouble he had was on pit exit on his first stop. Pato O'Ward was right in front of him. He's parked because he came in just a few seconds after Joseph did. And as Joseph started to leave, Colton Herta, who was pitted behind him, had a big run and therefore kind of squeezed Joseph. Joseph had to kind of hesitate, came out of the pits in third as far as the running order on the, you know, in the lead group was. You know, Christian Lundgaard had already stayed on the racetrack with a different out of sequence situation, but really Joseph's only trouble was that pit stop and restarting in the fourth spot. He passed Colton Herta very quickly. Then he got, you know, two chances to get Felix Rosenquist and he dispatched him with, I would say, relative ease. The first one he chose good decision to wait and not pass him there in that particular corner, turn four. And, you know, then he gets Rosenquist the next time by and he just waits for Lundgaard to pit. And from that point on, he sailed on. Here's a stat that I came up with today. This is so of those 30 wins, 9 of those wins, he has led in excess of 80% of the laps. Now you can't just pick a number because, you know, Iowa has a lot of laps and maybe Road America only has 55. So you just can't pick a number and say he's led at least 90 laps in so many races, but he's led 80% of the laps in 9 of the races he's won, including 92% in this one. And that's not even, I think that's third best as well. So he has had two other races. The one of them was the 2017 race at Road America, where he led 53 of 55. Truthfully, only gave up the lead to Pitt. And the other one was an Iowa race. So he's had some dominating performances, and this is just another example.
I think what also stands out, and, you know, I think some people joke about how miffed Joseph is at times and how he feels like he's been in a slump, and that may not be the right word for a guy that won four races in the Indy 500 last year, but he did not win a pole or a road or street course race. His last six wins have been on ovals, and I think that's a point of pride with IndyCar drivers. They all came up road racing, you know, and that is right or wrong, often determined as it's more about the driver than it is with an oval compared to the car. That's not necessarily true. You have to have a great car, especially on a super speedway, but he hadn't done this in a while. So I think that's kind of what had been gnawing at him, and that's why that was so significant. You saw his emotion by winning the pole, and he was so determined to get this done. And I know it's one race, but I'm feeling a lot better about my pick for Joseph Newgarden winning the championship now, just one race.
I think you'd have to, if you were to go to Vegas right now and find the odds, they would be way high for Joseph at this point. It might even be even money or less, because, as
really?
I said,
Pelot's going to do what Pelot does.
There's 7 of the 16 races, almost half the races that are left are on ovals. He's won 8 of the last 11, Kevin, over nearly 3 years.
That's why I picked him. But I'm not going to peacock too much that he is in control at this point, because I think Pato and Pelot and Dixon and maybe others are still going to have something to say. I think power is a factor. You know, and the point I brought up in the broadcast, and I know others have too, and Will has brought it up, you know, he had a pretty good excuse for not being on top of his game last year. He had bigger things going on before the season started with his wife's health. He didn't prepare the way he would like to prepare, and I think he did this year.
I think if you want to give me another Team Penske driver, give me McLaughlin over Power. I think McLaughlin, and there's no disrespect to Will Power. I work in the Will Power room at IMS, so I know full well what Will Power is capable of, and I get a constant reminder every day in the office. But I can tell you that, and you know this, but our fans are starting to figure it out too. This Scott McLaughlin character, he's pretty good. And he looks every bit the part of a champion contender right now. Yes, St. Pete was a good race for him last year, and he backed it up this year. So he was very good. I would argue that he was better than Pato O'Ward in this race, but he finished one spot behind him. Pato, you know, got up there early and then held the position, but it just felt like McLaughlin was charging through this field. What did he start? 9th, got to 3rd, and really was in O'Ward's lockstep most of the race, and certainly in the second half of the race was in lockstep with O'Ward. And I think under maybe some different conditions, maybe a wider track, a place where passing a little more prevalent, he wasn't going to catch Joseph, I don't think, on this day. But I thought McLaughlin was the second best car and driver combination in the field in this particular race. And I think McLaughlin is going to be right there to finish second or challenge for the series title.
Oh, as we all chatted in the paddock this weekend, a lot of really smart racing people had McLaughlin as their pick for the championship this year. I picked him last year, and I'm going to do him a favor and not pick him this year. So he might be the guy. So again, it's why we like this championship, is that we don't know what's going to happen at this point. So Newgarden wins this one. Race wasn't, you have these, as we always talk about. Some races are really good. And in street course races, maybe it does take chaos. You know, you didn't have as many restarts as you did when you have as many yellows as you had last year. You didn't have the crash fest that creates different types of situations. And nothing really out of the ordinary. So it happens. What wasn't a particularly entertaining race, and maybe in part that's because Joseph was just so much better and you weren't going to have anything up front, and because Chevy clearly got better. Top four, that impacts things a little bit, because I picked Colton Herta coming into the weekend, and he was the best Honda, and Honda has traditionally, I think I put this note down somewhere, Steve Wittick of Trackside Online tweeted this yesterday, that Honda has had the big advantage in street racing for a while, and well, I thought he did, but I don't see it, but that was the essence of it. Honda has been the manufacturer on street racing, and maybe the tide has turned to Chevy now.
Well, I would just say that while Honda has been good on those street races, you go back to Toronto last year with Lundgaard, and Detroit with Alex Palou, and Kirkwood at Nashville, I would remind you that Team Penske's won 12 of these 20 races in St. Pete with six different drivers. So Team Penske has owned St. Pete. And so that's one factor. But I agree with you on the street racing. The other thing I would say was interesting about this particular weekend, I think we saw the same race basically twice. The Indy Next by Firestone of race was almost the same kind of deal. Nolan Siegel wins the pole. Every time there was a restart and he was threatened, he did what Joseph did, and he basically just pulled away from him. Now, in Siegel's case, obviously no pit stops. He didn't have to, you know, fight through the first pit exchange the way Joseph did, but largely Siegel and Newgarden just, they weren't going to be touched on this particular day without some real chaos, and neither race really had that chaos. He had a couple incidents in both races where cars off track or cautions created, but largely the same race twice. That doesn't happen very often, and I don't think we're going to see that moving forward too often. You're going to have races where drivers, just the aggression gets the best of them. In this case, you know, we didn't have a Grosjean-McLaughlin moment like we did last year in turn four late in the race. We didn't have the leader hiccup coming into the front straightaway the way Pato did last year with four laps to go. So, you know, just kind of one of those races, and we'll hope for a more exciting in terms of the mix-up at the front when we get to Thermal next week.
Since you mentioned Indy Next, we'll go ahead and cover that quickly here with Nolan Siegel, who becomes an IndyCar driver in 2 weeks. He'll be in the Dale Coyne number 18 car at Thermal and also at Long Beach, and then attempt to qualify for the Indy 500 and then run Toronto as well. But he did get a great start on the championship. Jacob Abel finished second again. Louis Foster finished third. Michael DiOrlando was really impressive. He was attacking Louis Foster, who I think is the pick by many to win the championship. I would also say many are going to pick Siegel. Some are going to pick Jacob Abel. There are a few others that are legitimate picks, but DiOrlando is in one of those situations where that's the only race that he has confirmed. He was announced last week for Andretti Cape, and that helps his cause. You know, a win, I think, probably would have kept him in the car. You generally don't see people lose their seat, but it still takes budget to run these cars. But hopefully there's some enthusiasm for him. So I was impressed with what he did by coming home fourth. Reese Gold fifth. Jonathan Brown had a really good run in sixth. Some other notables, Miles Rowe came home in eighth. The stat I was looking for, Honda won all five street races. And I always like to look to recent history, just like I do in head-to-heads when it comes to, you know, football, basketball, baseball teams. Some stat about head-to-head matchups between the Pacers and Knicks from 1998 don't mean anything. 2 or 3 years ago does. But I always think last year is most significant, or in the current era with, you know, whatever the tire is, whatever the spec is as far as aero screen. Now, this is a different one this year, which, you know, maybe is reason. Maybe that's one of the factors. Chevy figured it out a little bit better. There's less weight on the car. It changes the balance potentially a little bit. I'll look forward to talking to some people more before Thermal of what they felt different. What I had gathered coming into the weekend was, I don't think I can tell the difference, but I also got the answer is I'm not sure, because I've driven different kinds of cars. You know, I was driving the hybrid car with more weight and then back to the hybrid car without the weight. And I'm trying to remember exactly what last year's car was like. But that's one of the reasons we said that, hey, maybe you don't just give this to Alex Palou, because it's not the exact same package that you had from last year. So Chevy may have gotten better, and maybe they and drivers like this situation and this package, even if it's a minute change, a little bit different than last year's.
Yeah, yeah. Liz, I will also add, and I know we'll go through it just a little bit, but let's give a couple shout-outs to a couple drivers that really deserve it, and teams as well. But to have Meyer Shank Racing go from qualifying 15th and 25th in last year's St. Pete race, and then, of course, both cars wadded up in that first lap incident, to put Felix Rosenquist on the front row, and having finished seventh, he did really well, chased after Joseph through the first third of the race when no one else could. That was a really pleasant surprise. How about Kiffin Simpson, who was, you know, right there sort of behind kind of the group? I think he finished, what, 12th, 14th, something like that. That was pretty impressive. 14th. To finish his first IndyCar Series race.
Best rookie.
Yeah, best rookie, and Junkos Hollinger. I know they finished well at St. Pete last year with Callum Ilott, but Grosjean was strong throughout the weekend, gave them a good starting spot, gave them, you know, a relatively good finish. It was good for that team to kind of get off on the right foot. So there's a couple, three that I think, you know, we won't talk about a great deal in the box score. Another one, Santino Ferrucci and Foyt finishing 11th. You know, mm-hmm. when there really wasn't a lot of chaos and retirements and crashes, I mean, that was a pretty legit 11th. Good for them. And those are a couple that just kind of stuck out to me, and aside from the big teams that we often always talk about.
I agree on all those. And I was not in Rosenquist's section. I have not had time to watch the race back. It may not be until next week before thermal, as I prep for 59 cars and three drivers per car this weekend. But didn't Rosenquist have a slow pit stop as well?
Yeah, he did. He did.
Okay, so, you know, that impacts him. So I would say he lived up to some hope there. And I know this from, I wasn't covering him, but I had the Andretti cars. And they are loving being associated with him. So, you know, the previous arrangement was more, what does Andretti do to help Meyer Shank Racing? That was the partnership. It was a technical partnership. Meyer Shank Racing pays Andretti Technologies to supply engineering and setups. And they certainly work together, but you got the sense that it was more about how can Andretti help Meyer Shank? And certainly last year, whatever was happening was not working.
Yeah.
And the feeling is this year that it's going to work because Rosenquist and his ability, and then he is going to be able to help on the other end. Several times it was mentioned, well, we're going to go to what Fro is doing. You know, and I didn't hear that a whole lot last year on the other side of things. So, and I also heard references of our five cars. So they're working together a little bit more, and it is definitely a give and take situation and a full partnership in that front. So Rosenquist is very well respected. He's fast. As he said before, he needs to put it together a little bit more on race day, but I think he held up his part of the job yesterday, and solid points on the others. And with Junkos Hollinger, yes, they finished well last year, but they didn't really have pace. That was, you know, it was great driving, staying out of chaos. But this year they were pretty quick. And it surprised Grosjean from talking to him coming into the weekend. You know, he's going to stay positive, and he's really good, I think, with what he says publicly. But I could just tell he had some concerns that what little testing there was didn't go great. And there were some suggestions made, but you don't know until you get to the racetrack. Turns out they worked, and they were legit quick this weekend. And, you know, he has the penalty, first of all, that sends him to the back, and then he has the mechanical. But he was, you know, on his way to a top 10 day legitimately, and that's a good step for them. One of the things we talked about last week was Ilott versus Junkos Hollinger, and Ilott did fine. I think this is very reasonable considering he had not driven that car. He had done a hybrid test day, not the same thing. That maybe shakes off the rust a little bit, but this was a very learning experience weekend. But Junkos Hollinger, I think, won the battle this time around with what they did with Grosjean.
Yeah. The other one I liked, and not that this was a surprise or anything, but Marcus Ericsson's transition into the team just looks seamless. It just feels good. Feels like, you know, sometimes you wonder, you know, when a athlete switches teams, the transition period is maybe slow. Is it rocky? Is it just take a little while? But he looks like he fits like a glove, and we shouldn't be surprised. That's who he is. We talk, you know, I get asked this a lot. Who are the guys that, you know, you just really feel like are a pro? Who's a pro? And I won't go through the whole field, but we've talked about this before. Marcus Ericsson's a pro. He just is.
Somebody was commenting when I was chatting with him before one of the practices there. I think they were watching in the truck, and there happened to be a camera on it. It's not on air, but just before the practice session started. And they were amazed at how relaxed, how friendly he looked 2 minutes before he's going to strap in a car and go 180 miles an hour, you know, with concrete walls on both sides. And I said, that's, you know, they said, Marcus looked like he was in a really good mood. And I said, no, he's pretty much always like that. That's just who he is. He is really level-headed. Now, it's not that he doesn't take it serious. And when he got out of the car after there was a mechanical, he was frustrated, you know, and he gave the international sign walking back to pit lane. This is one of the tips that I give the drivers that I help with media training. If you're not ready to talk yet, keep your helmet on. They can't talk to you until you take your helmet off, generally speaking. And he kept that helmet on for a long time. Hinch told this story on his podcast last week that that was one of the tricks that he used after he failed to qualify for the Indy 500. He was as meticulous as he could possibly be, taking his helmet, his head sock, his gloves off, just to give him a couple of extra moments, really minutes, to formulate his thoughts. Now, in this case, Marcus didn't have to really think how he was going to answer that, but that's it's helps you. Basketball players and football players get a cool down period before the media is allowed in if you're not the winner. Race car drivers do not get that. That's their opportunity to do that. But the point I was making is that, no, he's serious about it, and it's not all smiles and giggles all the time, but you give him a couple of minutes, and then, you know, all is good on that front. He did tell me, he said that the transition is going better than I expected. And I expected it to go well, but he said, yeah, it's really seamless. And I did not expect to be this comfortable this quickly.
Yeah, that's a good sign for them. I know the result wasn't there on the mechanical side this particular race, but I think he's going to be a factor for race wins at some point in this season, maybe multiple times, likely multiple times. And so there you go. We have one race in the books, a lead for Joseph Newgarden, and I guess he's going to hold this lead for probably about pretty close to a month, because the thermal race, while a lot of spotlight on this event because of, you know, the nature of it and the all-star kind of focus on it, non-points though, you know, it doesn't have an impact on the championship unless people tear up equipment and then get behind or something like that. But otherwise, you know, no impact on the point standings.
A couple other things. Do we read anything into Ganassi not being super strong with the next race also being a street race?
It was surprising that, you know, you didn't have better representation, but they raced well. Pelot raced well, got all the way to fourth. Honestly, you give him another... Oh, he was sixth. I don't have it right in front of me.
It's a great day from starting 13th to get to sixth. That's an Alex Palou type of championship day. And it's, I think, similar to what he did last year as well, maybe eighth last year. And Dixon had a solid, very quiet day, 11th to 9th. They were fine, but not awesome. Just a point. I think it's too soon to really read anything into it, but, you know, maybe not, but maybe they are not as in tune with these subtle changes to this year as some others are. And maybe it's more of a Chevy Honda thing.
You know, I'm just going to say this out loud, but, you know, and maybe it has nothing to do with anything, but, you know, Penske and Ganassi spent an awful lot of time in the hybrid program. And we have talked about that like it's an advantage. And it probably will be it certainly will be when you get to the hybrid portion of the season. But these drivers have to recalibrate, and they're very good. You know, I'm not saying they haven't figured it out, but they spent so much time with the hybrid. Is it possible that, you know, you just haven't had as much time with the other, with the first part of the year set up?
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe because you're doing two things. The other teams have not been given the opportunity to do those things, although I suspect they're still guesstimating what they will need to do in the second half. But yeah, the others were trying to engineer the cars to try to make use of the time. Christian Lundgaard mentioned this, and I think it's a fair point that it's really hard to, as a driver, come in and shake off the rust in the first weekend when you only have had 2 days of testing and Penske and Ganassi have had 15. Yeah, maybe an exaggeration, but all of their drivers have had 4 or 5 split around since last season. Makes a little bit tough. But then it was also looked at in qualifying. There were quite a few up front that did not also have any kind of an opportunity like that. Starting up front, Rosenqvist, Grosjean, BK all qualified in the top 7 and did not do their first hybrid test.
Right.
Yeah, some
right.
of them don't get that until the end of March, you know, this month at IMS. So there's that. And you know, one thing we still need to mention in this first segment, the guy who finished second, much different feeling than last year when he finished second, when he felt he was going to win the race. So it was a much happier and content Pato award after this race. He knew he just didn't have anything for Joseph Newgarden, but they took what was available and he finished a second and he felt pretty good about that.
Yeah, he did. Good for Pato. Yeah, different feeling.
All right, coming up in a moment, we'll get into some other things, some Twitter questions, and much more on the way. Trackside.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
93.5-107.5 The Fan.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Hi, this is Joseph Newgarden, and you're listening to Trackside.
Thank you for staying with us. Back at it for IndyCar coming up in just under 2 weeks in the Million Dollar Challenge. We'll talk more about that next week and the format and everything that goes along with that. That will be a very early Sunday morning affair, West Coast time. I think noon is the broadcast time coming up in a couple of weeks on NBC. Kurt, I think we'll start off this segment with a couple of behind-the-scenes things and then get into some questions. People oftentimes are curious about how some things work. One thing, I haven't checked Twitter for a little while, and I haven't looked on the website. I know some people are asking about post-race show. Unfortunately, sometimes things happen, and I guess we forgot to hit a button. So we did a post-race show on Peacock, but did it not air on Peacock?
No.
Yeah. Well, it was the best show I've ever done.
I bet. Yeah.
We interviewed 2 through 7. And I believe Lee Diffie answered a question on Twitter last night, and he said they're going to post it. So you might check Peacock to see if it's archived, or at the tail end of the race broadcast, it very likely would be, or maybe they put the interviews up on the NBC Motorsports YouTube page. So we talked to all the top finishers. I think it was 2 through 7 on that post-race show. So unfortunately, human error or maybe mechanical error sometimes gets in the way of those things. So did you like the open of the show, Bon Jovi, and the boat ride with the boys and everything coming in?
Well, how can you not like the Bon Jovi? And I thought really one of the great moments of the race was just Bon Jovi's, just his appreciation for what he had experienced being in the two-seater. Just his excitement. You know, he's like, you know, what are you going to come back and do this again? He's like, I might have to buy a team. And, you know, we have a lot of celebrities. We've had a lot of celebrities that are very high profile, very cool guys and gals. But this one was one of the more authentic, seemed like he genuinely got it. And, I wouldn't be surprised to see him at like the Indy 500 come May.
Those are the type of celebrities that you like to have. Someone that he gave a good interview. Not all celebrities give good interviews. He played along with our shtick and everything else was really cool on that front. I got to leave. So the booth guys came into the race on the boat. I left on the boat. I actually helped arrange that. That was one of Jackson's sponsors for the weekend from the Tampa, California Closets. I heard we were trying to do a bit on a boat, and I said, well, the guy who's the president of the branch bought a boat slip there. He's going to be there. So we used that. So I went out for a nice boat ride, 3-hour tour at the end of the race. That was a lot of fun. And then I did the bit in the stands. We were trying to find the Swedes that were so colorfully dressed. They were there again, but they weren't somewhere where I could quickly get from the grid to find them. So at dinner last night, they come walking by. So I took a picture with them and posted it on Twitter this morning. So they were a lot of fun. And we were just getting ready to put them on the air. I hope I didn't jinx this. But the through the field that we did, that's where I was going to use it. When we brought up Marcus Ericsson, they were standing in the front row of the grandstands behind pit lane, behind his pit. And there were like 10 of them there. And we were going to show them. And then as we're doing the through the field, I'm looking at my monitor and, you know, we're going first, second, third. And I look and I see Ericsson, who was sixth, is now seventh, eighth, ninth in about that time. And I'm on my intercom and I'm not listening to my scanner because during those, I make sure that I'm listening to the broadcast so I don't miss a toss to me. So I didn't know what was going on. So we had to kind of blow that off. And then I ran down to the end and we found out that there was the engine problem. So, hope we didn't jinx them for that, but those guys were a lot of fun and we'll look forward to seeing them again at the future. What else from the weekend stood out behind the scenes of interest? Well, I guess we should mention our driver had a really good weekend. So Jackson drove in VP Challenge for an Aston Martin team. I would say legitimately there are about six really good drivers. You know, there was a very real chance that he's going to finish sixth. There are some gentleman drivers in there that, as a young guy, he should be a little bit better than them. So there's 18 or 19 or whatever in there. It's sort of a bronze and a silver class. But I think there were six silvers that are all drivers very experienced. So, you know, he might just be looking at a top five. Well, he was quick, fastest in one of the practices, had the fastest lap in race one, was in the wrong gear at the start of race one, so lost a spot. But then passed the young driver who is really well-regarded, Luca Mars, who drives the Ford Mustang, who crushed everyone at Daytona, passed him legit and pulled away from him. Got bunched up again a little bit on a late caution, but gapped him by a lot. Finished second to Jesse Lazar, who's won the Rolex 24 before, former USF driver, really good driver. And then in race two, started second again, took the lead at the start, and by lap five had a 25 car length gap and was running away with it. Then there was a caution, held him off on the first restart, another caution, second restart, maybe even a third, and then the last one. So I will use the training that I have offered parents before and stay out of it. So I'll just say on the broadcast, they felt that the restart was jumped by the McLaren and Jackson should have been declared the winner. But he lost the lead coming out of the final corner on the restart. What I would also say is this, that the driver behind him has probably 300 or 400 sports car starts and just used his experience of anticipating how you restart and knowing what's going to be called and what's not going to be called, especially when you're the second class. it's P3s, LMP3s in front, so the GT cars are behind, and they're not really watching all that closely. So Jackson had lost the lead, but by the time they even got to the final corner, by the time he could see the flag stand, the other guy was behind him. He almost got him the next lap, didn't finish second. Still a really, really good weekend. And he will race at Sebring in the higher level Michelin Pilot Challenge back with the CSM Porsche team. That will be on Peacock late this Friday afternoon. So it's a good weekend. And the California Closets people in Florida were fantastic. We had a full suite of folks and a lot of fun.
Sounds like it was a great weekend then. What's he going to do with the trophy? Does it sit on the kitchen table?
We gave one to the team because they were very nice to us. And if there are other opportunities in the future, we would like them to consider him. Gave them one of the champagne bottles. This is his first podium as a 21-year-old. And first podium in America in a little while. His last podium was in the UK in the Formula Ford Festival in a heat race. So we kept a trophy and gave one in. They have cool trophies, and they are heavy because I had to carry it back to the compound while he went in and did a tour with some of his guests. So fun weekend, fun stuff. Twitter questions. Okay, Patty Jude just answered your question about the Peacock post-race show. Lynn, formerly the Spurs fan, says, amazing crowd and weekend of racing. What's up with Michael Andretti? Can we keep this behind closed doors? If one owner should understand this clearly, it's Michael from his F1 experience. Never hear Chip complain like this. Nice to see him defend Roger, Lynn says. So this is in reference to some quotes from Michael Andretti in a Nathan Brown Indianapolis star story where I think he essentially said, eventually, if you're not going to invest in the series, you should probably think about selling.
Yeah, I did. That was with a small group of reporters, and it was deep into the conversation, I'm told. Michael probably wanted some of that back, honestly. We'll see how this plays out. Next week, we have a two-hour show in advance of Thermal. I suspect, because this is kind of a lengthy conversation, you know, discussion, things that we'd like to cover from all the off-track things. This is a one-hour show tonight. What's that?
Takes a little deeper dive than what we have time for tonight in an hour.
Yeah, it really does. So I suspect we'll learn more here over the next few weeks, but it does sound like they've put together at least a small group of owners that are going to work on this and assist with management. And that would be Zach Brown, Dan Tauris of Gainbridge and Group 1001, and Jim Meyer of Meyer Shank Racing.
Steven, I should know this by now. Terrell? Give me a phonetic next time.
I think it's Terrell.
Terrell, thank you. With all the ovals to come, should we give the championship to Joseph now with five cars? Did Ganassi overreach? Will Chevy dominate Honda? Did we all underrate Kevin Simpson? Yeah, we've kind of covered all that stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know that definitively we answered any of that, but I think that's... So the Kiffin Simpson situation, maybe we did. And here's something to think about, because that was one of the debates. It's similar to the Devlin DeFrancesco path, wondering, all right, you've got a great opportunity, a good team. Do you take it when it's offered to you because you have the budget, or are you better trying to compete for an Indy Lights Indy Next Championship? He decided to move up. We discussed that. There could be the feeling that, hey, you're with a great program, you'll get more experience, and you'll be better in year two next year than you would be in year one next year, even if you win the Indy Next Championship. Keep this in mind, though, too. Kiffin Simpson's on a great program, great teammates, has all of the budget to do all the testing that he wants in the offseason. They went and ran Super Formula cars. They may have run F2 cars. He's been in the seat a lot over the last 3 years, so maybe he will surprise us. And I also think that he's smart enough to understand, you know, he's not racing for wins. He's, I think, a mature young man and understands I need laps, and he's going to score some points by not taking major risks most of the time. And maybe he will surprise us as far as that's concerned. Braden asks, any update if there will be hybrid testing at the Indy Road Course later this month? Yeah, that's on the schedule, right? Isn't it March 28th and 29th?
I believe those are the dates. I started to say in my head they were 26, 27, but it's the last few days of March.
Keep an eye on your X or Twitter, and you'll see some of that in the near future. Okay, I think we're out of time for this segment, so we'll wrap things up, see what we missed. Coming up in a moment on Trackside.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
Hi, this is Pato Award, and you're listening to Trackside.
Okay, final segment. What we missed came out late this afternoon, early this evening. Pretty big news in the sports car world with an IndyCar connection. A report from Sports Car 365, I think other outlets too. Chip Ganassi Racing and Cadillac are parting ways at the end of the season in IMSA Sports Car Racing. And Sports Car 365 mentioned some rumors about maybe a Ford top-level sports car program. Ganassi has been associated with Ford before, so that's really early in the season for that news to come out. I don't believe Ganassi confirmed it, and I think GM just kind of had a statement. So that is some news. What else? Oh, I forgot to mention this. If you did want to watch Jackson's VP Challenge race from St. Pete this weekend, race two, actually both races are archived on Peacock, and race two will air on CNBC. Usually it's in a couple of weeks. I'll find out on our conference call in a couple of days what it is, and I'll let people know next Tuesday night. Thanks to everyone for their kind messages of support and putting up with our little updates on the program here. I did a little track run tonight. Couldn't do the full track run. I thought it'd be best, and to avoid maybe getting arrested by running on an airport runway, so I couldn't go down the main straightaway. But actually ran into Kevin Savory, one of the promoters, and just chatted a little bit about how great the event was. And we really didn't talk about that at the beginning. But you know, I've always said I'd love to see the season start earlier, but it needs to start here, and I don't really think they want to start earlier. And this just had great energy. The crowd was massive on Saturday. It felt like race day. I think probably pretty similar, probably a little bit up on Sunday, but just a really, really good weekend. Full 2 hours next Tuesday night at 7 o'clock. We're out of time for Kurt and Elijah. I'm Kevin. Thanks for joining us on 93.5 and 107.5 The Fan.